This morning's public read comes from the book of 1 Samuel here this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 14, as we continue our journey in this particular book. We've already seen the comings and goings of a priest named Eli and his two boys, and we're now seeing the coming and the goings of two men, Samuel the prophet, who's also the last judge of Israel, for that matter, and King Saul, who has just blown his kingdom. His kingdom is going to be taken away, and now God is going to seek and find a replacement to King Saul. And that's when we will be introduced to the young man, David himself. Picking up in verse 19 here this morning, all the way to verse 35. Okay, 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 19 to 35. And it came to pass, while Saul talked unto the priest, that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves. And they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a great discomfiture. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. Likewise, all the men of Israel, which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth-Aven. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may avenge on my enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. How foolish for any commander-in-chief or any commander on the battlefield to deny his troops basic necessities. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with an oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it into the honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people, and said, thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. Then said Jonathan, my father had troubled the land. See, I pray you, how my eyes have been enlightened, because I have tasted of this little honey. How much more if happily the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found? For had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines? And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. Notice what happens when you don't take care of your troops in this situation. And all the people fell upon the spoil, and took sheep and oxen and calves, and slew them on the ground. And the people did eat them with the blood. They were basically eating raw meat. Then they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sinned against the Lord, and in that they eat the blood. Okay, and that's true. And he said, ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, bring me hither every man his ox, every man his sheep. Slay them here, and eat, and sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night, and slew them there. And Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. Please be seated. And may God bless His word. We're going to entitle this, Man's Stupid Superstitions. Man's Stupid Superstitions, which we even see lived out today in our own lives. Like Friday the 13th, don't walk in front of a black cat, don't walk under an umbrella, under a ladder, don't open an umbrella in a house, throw salt over your shoulders, whatever. All these stupid things that we have come up with. Stupid. Here we find that the battle has been set. Okay, all the key players are in position. And this noise comes up. The battle has now begun. But did you notice a few things in this reading that should have made you a little bit uncomfortable? Remember, we are told in the last couple of readings, Saul is down to about 600 people that are willing to bear arms, that are willing to follow his leadership, down to 600. The Philistines, on the other hand, are like the stars of heaven for multitude. So Israel is outgunned and outnumbered. Okay? But did you pick up something in verses 21 to 22? And beloved, you find this even in a church. You're going to find sometimes that a church can easily be divided. One faction waves the pastor's flag, the other faction wants to show him the back door. You find allegiances amongst people, even in families. You have certain allegiances, certain cliques. And sometimes you're either in a clique or you're tossed out of a clique. All depends if you follow the rules of the clique. Look at verse 21. Did you pick up on this? When the battle was now going what seems to be in favor of God's people, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, we call these people today traitors. And beloved, there's always going to be a Benedict Arnold in a family or in a church. There's always going to be a Judas Iscariot somewhere in the family, in the congregation, in the neighborhood, or on the job, just waiting for the golden opportunity to plunge their knife into someone's back. Traitors, traitors, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites. Notice, now these traitors are now a traitor again. They're going back to Israel because the battle seems to be going in favor of King Saul. So a double traitor. I was told by one of my former supervisors in the military that if a person lies to you, they'll steal from you. And if a person can steal from you, they'll lie to you. And notice, if you're a traitor once, you can be a traitor a second time. So these original traitors, who were Hebrews, who went to the Philistine side when the Philistines seemed to be on the winning edge, now come back to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. And then notice the cowards. There's always cowards in families and churches and neighborhoods and in business. People who really, you can't count on them when you're in a jam, when you're in a pickle, when you're in a pinch. There are family members you know you can never count on. You're never going to call them in a time of need. They're not dependable. They're not dependable. Why do I say that? Well, likewise, all the men of Israel, which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in the battle. So you're going to have traitors and you're going to have cowards on the battlefield. You're going to have people that are going to knife you in the front, and you're going to have people who are going to knife you in the back. And so, my dear friend, guess what? As we're looking at Acts 19, isn't this most appropriate and most providential? As we're beginning our resuming Acts 19 in what's entitled The Cosmic Battle, Worlds in Conflict. Notice the conflict that is here. You have Saul with 600 people, okay, maybe not fully and adequately equipped. And you got the Philistine army that is highly mobile and well equipped. And what do you find? Traitors coming out of the cracks and cowards coming out of the caves. Isn't that sad? And notice verse 24. And the men of Israel were distressed that day. It would seem not because of the battle, but because of one man's superstition, King Saul, saying, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may avenge," notice this is all selfish, self-centered, "I may avenge myself on my enemies." So none of the people tasted any food. Well, beloved, I served in the military for 24 years, and my occupation was food service. And, beloved, during even a military exercise where we played war games, played war, we had to feed these people four times a day. Midnight chow, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We didn't let them starve. If hot food was not available as we geared up for the war games, they at least had MREs. Meals ready to eat. They were given 3 days supply, and on the fourth day, hot chow was expected on that fourth day. This, on the part of Saul, was stupid. Somehow he felt that if he starved his troops, he would win the day. All that he did, according to the Bible, was aggravate them while on the battlefield. I'm sorry, beloved. Soldiers are not machines. They're not machines. Well, Jonathan, as we read further, Jonathan doesn't hear his daddy's order. And he comes across some honey dripping from its source. And he takes his rod, takes a little nibble or a little dribble, and his eyes were enlightened. You know why? It's sweet. This is a carbohydrate shot in the vein. He was invigorated. He was giving a boost of energy because it's sugary. It's a carbohydrate packed with power. Well, he's told about his daddy's order after the fact. And notice what this son says in verses 28 and 29. Then answered one of the people and said, "Thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, Cursed be the man that eateth any food this day." Notice, why would a commanding general put a curse on his own army? Isn't that stupid? Yes, it's asinine. And the people, notice, not only were they distressed, they're now fainting. You know why? They've basically burned every calorie on the battlefield. They're not going around with an IV attached to their side, pumping in some type of energy drink into their veins. Then said Jonathan, watch this, "My father had troubled the land." Jonathan made the right assessment. His father blew it. "See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I've tasted a little bit of this honey." And then notice in verse 31, the people were so faint, they were so driven in their madness, that when they came upon the Philistine spoil, the livestock, they didn't even bother to cook it. And you and I both know one of the stipulations in the law of Moses was not to eat meat with the blood, because the life, blood was the life. Blood equaled life. Life was attached to the blood. They became cannibals. They digressed into beast, eating raw flesh. And when Saul hears about this, he has to put a stop to it. He finally gets his senses, and they cook the meat, offer sacrifice back to God, but in the process, he gives his people a respite by at least sitting down and cooking the food and eating it without the blood. All because of one man's stupid superstitiousness, by thinking that somehow, by starving his people, he would somehow spur them on to greater victory. And we saw the negative effect on his people. Distressed, faint, and then he pushed them over the edge to violate the law of Moses, full throttle. And then we see his son. My father has troubled God's people today. The only one that had any sense in his brain. But that's not the rest of the story. Wait till next week. So may the Lord choose to bless his word. Amen.